Hello and welcome to Starts and Grafts. I'm Conagher Fogg, and each week I'm joined by an emerging artist to discuss the highs and lows of forging a creative career amidst a global pandemic. My guest this week is Henry Weeks. He's a saxophonist, a DJ, and an event producer currently based in Berlin. He's worked with an incredible amount of artists and has produced and performed at events across the UK, taking a love for jazz and Brazilian music with him wherever he goes. Now, there are some sound issues with this episode. We don't know why, but these things do happen. Please bear with us because it's a lovely conversation and we had a great time recording it. Henry, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So I was trying to think before the conversation when the last time was that we'd seen each other, and I think it was at the very end of 2019 at the Thirsty Scholar in Manchester. Do you remember?
I remember it so well. That was honestly a really fantastic night for both me and my friends, and me seeing you was definitely like one of the reasons why it was so great. Very rogue. I can't believe we met at such a great institution.
What a class place. Got a lot of love for many places on Oxford Road, but particularly the Thirsty Scholar. But it was my like mum's birthday and I was with my family and very like smashed, and you with your mates. And it was that kind of coming together of two people that haven't seen each other for ages.
But it was also a Northern Soul night. Do you remember the music? It was really good.
Yes.
It was so good.
I had like a bit of a funky knee going on. I was like jiving with like my auntie and then you. And yeah, what a class time. But
I'm pretty sure I danced with your auntie. I was that binned. And also I love Northern Soul music. So I was in my element. And yeah, it was so great. It's been way too long.
It was class. But so much has happened since then in the world, the music industry and everyone's personal lives. You're in Berlin now. Tell me about that. How did that come about?
It's been quite a journey, to be honest. Also, thinking back to December 2019, I would never have imagined I would be in Berlin now, which is kind of crazy because everything happened so quickly. So in March, not only did the global pandemic happen, but it was also a very big month for me personally. So I had three kind of major events musically that were going on in my life. So I had I was doing an EP launch with the Brazilian band that I was in. I think that happened on the, I will need to get the dates right, I forget if it's the end of February it happened.
Okay.
And then the weekend after I put on the Cuban trumpet player Yelfris Valdez. I put on a gig of his at Highbot Book Club, which I was very proud of because he's an amazing...
What a venue as well.
Well, this is the thing. Both the EP launch and the gig that I promoted were at Hypod Book Club. It's a bit of a second home for me. But yeah, I was really proud of that because for me, that was the first big gig I'd promoted as well. And he, you know, he's just an amazing trumpet player. And to bring him up to these was really special for me. And then the week after, I went on a tour with Brazilian Wax. So we did like a UK tour and we brought a Brazilian DJ over to DJ with us. So like there's these kind of 3 or 4 weeks which were like almost the coming together of my kind of my year. And then on the second half of the Brazilian Wax tour, it all got cut short. And it was crazy. It was surreal because for me as well, just so I explain the timeline, we had 3 gigs for the Brazilian Wax. We had like the Friday and the Saturday and then the Monday in Edinburgh. And then on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, that's basically when lockdown happened. So we had this Monday at Sneaky Pete's in Edinburgh, which was like the last dance, you know.
So you were going right up until the curtain call almost.
Oh, we got called early. We got booed off stage, you know. So we had 2 gigs on the Friday and the Saturday for Brazilian Wax in Leeds and Sheffield. And they got cancelled because of COVID.
When you were doing those kind of final, kind of on the cusp of lockdown gigs, was there like a difference in the audience? Did you have to take certain precautions? Like what was the feel, or was it still quite careless?
Oh, it was it was bizarre and hectic because, I mean, so for me and Joe Osborne, the guy I do Brazilian wax with, we'd spent so long preparing for this. So we brought over Trepanado, who's one half of the Salvagem duo, who are based in Sao Paulo. But we were doing like an exclusive UK tour with him. But that involved booking flights over. You know, this was like a big deal, especially for us. And we were paying quite a lot of money in relative to like how much we had. And so when this news started emerging, we were like, it's just not a thing. Like, it just can't be a thing. We just don't want to think about it, you know.
We weren't burying our heads in the sand, but we were kind of more holding out to try and get through, you know, because it had been such a big deal for us. And I just remember this so well. I remember there were phases. So at one point, Augusto Oliviani, he wasn't going to get his flight from Brazil. And we persuaded him to get on the flight. We're like, it's going to be fine. And then he gets to London. And then the venues started going, you know, you need to post about this because people are not going to come otherwise. And there were these certain, you know, series of events which we had to, like, we're basically putting out fires. And I remember the first two events we did were in Brighton and London. And these were venues which we'd sold out previously, you know, in the October before. And it was just a weird vibe because, like, less people showed up than had tickets. And we thought we needed to
break even.
Exactly, exactly. But then on the Monday, it basically turned into like the last dance. And it was so funny because the first few nights were a little bit disappointing, but the last night in Edinburgh on the Monday is Sneaky Pete's, this amazing club, really small, like a capacity of about 120. Honestly, just absolutely rammed. Looking back on it, the least COVID-friendly scenario. But, you know, that was kind of made it all worthwhile.
How did he get back to Brazil?
So we just had to book him an emergency flight back, basically. And then it was strange because, like, what happened for me was after this period, you know, this quite intense period, I was exhausted. So I just spent the next week absolutely knackered in bed, kind of enjoying the excuse for some time off. And then things started unraveling.
It must have looked very bleak. The future must have looked quite bleak for someone that's livelihood is in events and live music.
Well, yeah, no, it was bleak, but I think I didn't realise how bleak it was until a lot later.
Right.
Because, like, I don't know, there's a naivety about living in... So just for context, I just left university. So this was my year out of university. And as a student, I had this kind of, I felt invincible. I could just kind of do anything and I'd get away with it. And someone else would sort out the problem. And especially having done events within uni and having been involved with uni societies, it feels like there's someone always watching over you. There's always someone kind of...
There's always someone to turn to when there's an issue, some sort of higher power, someone that feels like a proper adult that you can turn to and go, I need a hand with this. Can you sort it out, please?
Literally, like someone's just going to be like... You know, we'll sort this out, give it a few months type of thing. But I think as well, like, there were some certain things I was really looking forward to. So I don't know if your listeners will be aware of Hi-Fi Sunday Joint.
Which is a big old thing in Leeds, isn't it? It's a brilliant venue and it's a brilliant event that they have on a Sunday for anyone that's not familiar with it. So did you have that lined up?
Yeah, it was my first Hi-Fi Sunday Joint in the May. And I was really excited. Like, it was, you know... Having both of us gone to Leeds will know, like, it's a good benchmark if your band's doing okay. And, you know, we were headlining and this was super exciting. We'd released an EP. But what happened was, you know, so things just started getting cancelled because basically I had nothing in April, but in May I had quite a few things going on. So I actually had two Sunday joints because I was playing in someone else's band. And I was buzzing. I was making it in Leeds, you know, my saxophone playing was going somewhere. I'd just done a UK tour. And then suddenly things start getting cancelled and I wanted to do some more gigs again. I wanted to promote again. I was like, right, let's look for dates in the summer. And then suddenly stuff in the summer gets pushed back and I don't know. And then, yeah, I mean, that was kind of like the start of COVID. I feel like I could just go on and talk about my whole experience with COVID. But yeah, that was kind of how it first.
Well, that is why we're here.
It's so funny though, because for me, COVID has given me a lot of time to think and reflect. And even now, because like it's been almost a year, I reflect about the start of COVID and it's a completely different time for me because I was in such a different headspace. Leeds was the center of my universe and I loved it. I still do love it. But the idea of moving or changing was not in the plan, because I had a plan. I had these gigs lined up. I was going to be a professional musician in Leeds, and I was just going to go elsewhere. And it was bizarre, because then from going from doing UK tours and some gigs happening, suddenly everything's cancelled and I'm on furlough money. I worked at a studio part time. I worked at Iger Studios. Cool. And I worked for Hyde Park Books, doing like PR and press and working for their record label. And suddenly I'm on furlough, and suddenly the days are endless and there's only so much sourdough you can bake.
Was that what you turned to? Was that your release, sourdough?
Sourdough and vegan lasagna. You know, that's...
I wrote that.
But yeah, it was crazy. And also for me, as an extrovert, and I've only realised how much of an extrovert I am during lockdown, I really bounce off other people. But not in the sense of like, I'm not necessarily the loudest in the room or the one who's making all the noise, but just to go around to someone's house and play some music, or go around and listen to music, or to host the dinner party and do a stupid theme. And I don't know, I love doing that. I love being creative with people.
Being creative with them in any way, by the sounds of it, as well, whether it's doing something ridiculously stupid or, I mean, one of my friends, she's an absolute nutter. We've been in a supermarket and she'll go, let's play Ready, Steady, Cook.
Yeah.
Buy five ingredients, put it in a bag and we'll see what we can make. You've got to realise that being around people and being creative can take many different forms, I think, can't it? Like you were saying.
Well, yeah, like I think as well, I particularly was someone who kind of boxed myself in as a creative. Like I did things and I didn't do other things. And like, I don't know, I realised I work with people. I like working with people. But I didn't realise I needed to work with people. Mm. I don't know. And there's a subtle difference of like actually being alone works for some creative people. Having that time works for some people. And for me, it was good to have some time to reflect. But there comes a point where like, I just want to bounce off someone else's energy. I want to do something and they'll say, I like that. I'm going to throw something else in, and you kind of create something. That's how I do it, you know, so it's strange.
Honestly, that is why I am here doing this right now. I couldn't agree more, because it's really interesting. And we got to a point where people were doing lots of catch-ups over Zoom and stuff, which was great, and I really enjoyed that. But what I'm loving more than anything about these conversations is that there's a real focus and a real purpose to them, if that makes sense. And it's not just going, oh, what have you done this week? Not much. Do you know what I mean? There's a real focus. But you mentioned Leeds there, and you mentioned the word bubble. But from when I remember my time in Leeds, when you was there at the same time, and what I've seen afterwards, you completely immersed yourself in, and are still very much immersed in, the culture and the art scene in Leeds. You did... Honestly, in your first year, I just remember kind of watching from afar as you conducted a musical, had a radio show, ran for president of the Music Society, and did all these brilliant things. But I wonder how the current freshers must feel, especially the ones that wanted to get out there and make music and really find themselves for the first time independent, with a chance to divulge and get involved in a scene which is a bit different to what their home life's like. It must be devastating not being able to look into the incredible opportunities that a city like Leeds, Manchester, Sheffield, London has to offer.
I find it so funny, because just on the point of my first year, like I learned so much from doing too much, you know, but I'm so grateful for that opportunity. And you're right, like for that to be taken away, like now I feel mature enough. Well, I've had to mature, but I was at a stage in life where like I was able to adapt to the new scenario, the new situation. I think for me as well, going to university, I got a real chance to find what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be. And I'm still figuring that out for sure. But having a chance to do that for the first time was great, because I kind of just threw myself at everything, as you saw, you know. And yeah, like it must be so hard. And I think for me as well, I know how much work I've had to put in for me to be okay. Do you know what I mean? Like how much I've had to work on myself just to be okay. And like, that's from years of experience, essentially. Do you know what I mean? Like, it must be so hard for them, because like, you just, everything gets taken away, doesn't it?
you must feel very lost being in a new city.
Yeah.
Not having the opportunities that are just at your feet, or that were at the feet, you know, our feet when we started university, and just throwing yourselves into anything. And if it doesn't work, then that is completely fine. You turn to something else. But not having them must be so difficult. So we've talked about March and the difficult May and summer that you had. I want to know, how have you ended up in Berlin? What's brought that on?
I quite enjoy telling this story now because it's a strange time. So furlough happened from working at Hyperbook. So I was kind of furloughed, but I was making literally enough to pay my bills and my rent. That was it. But I didn't want to get an employment benefit because I didn't want to be seen as an employed, but I was hardly making any money. So I needed to get a new job. Basically, long story short, I trained to be a care worker. So I trained to work for like in an elderly home, an elderly residence home. And itself was eye-opening. And I was really proud that I'd kind of taken that decision because I've always wanted to, I love working with people and I want to do something which is kind of socially positive, you know, like something which I could feel proud about doing.
Okay.
Basically, the story after that was I was told I could get a part-time job doing that. So I was going to do like 2 or 3 days a week as a care worker. And then the place where I was going to work didn't have a position available, which they said they would. So I ended up working in the kitchen of a care home part-time.
Which, making sourdough.
Old people don't like sourdough, I've learned.
Damn.
But it was so funny as well because like my parents weren't best pleased at first with me becoming a carer because like, you know, I'd done this university education and they kind of were hoping I'd kind of, I don't know, take it to the next level, so to speak. And so there's a bit of drama there. And after all that, to do the training, so then we put in a kitchen, was a bit like, okay, okay, it's a job, it's a job. But also, I loved it because I would just get in there, I'd get in at 8 o'clock. I was working as the KP, so I wasn't even cooking. I was literally just in the corner, get the speaker on, best of new order, 4 hours. Do you know what I mean? Like just washing pans, cleaning up, serving old people food.
Brilliant.
It was so funny though, because so there were two Tonys in the kitchen. There was Yorkshire Tony and Portuguese Tony.
Not to be confused.
So Antonio was Portuguese Tony, but he called himself Tony. Yorkshire Tony was an old raver and he loved acid house. So when it was Yorkshire Tony, acid house, new order, guy called Gerald all day long. Honestly, the music was so loud. I'd go out because I'd have to serve food to the old people. You've got to imagine, because normally I like to think of myself as quite a colourful guy. You know, if I go out, I'm the guy in the full purple tracksuit with the beret on. Do you know what I mean?
With the beautiful pink hair.
Literally, pink hair, ear piercings, necklaces, bougie. Absolutely love it. But in the kitchen, I was in full checked. Hairnet,
yeah.
Face mask.
Glamorous.
Glamorous. Greasy. Very greasy. But I'd go and serve the food to the old people. And it was a tiring job. I worked 8 to 6. But I'd come back to the kitchen, you just hear this acid house, right, which is just ridiculous. But then when Antonio was in, Portuguese Tony, he loved Brazilian music. So we used to have Brazilian music on all the time in the kitchen.
Best of both worlds.
Well, yeah, but it was just so funny because it was a very strange time because I was there for 6 months, which actually was a lot longer than anyone anticipated. But it was a very strange time because it was summer. So it was a time where I was with my friends. We were kind of making the most of lockdown. You're in this kind of summer days. Every day, you don't really worry about anything because the sun's out. And, you know, you finish work and you go and chill in Hyde Park. And I was kind of doing my job and I finally had some money to settle in. And I was still practicing every day. You know, I'd still play the saxophone all the time. But I was just in this kind of weird days. And I did that for 6 months. I got a huge appreciation, actually, for how hard it is to do those jobs, to be a care worker, to, I don't know, work in those industries and how lucky I was to be a creative person.
You know, you say that, but I bet those two Tonys will really remember that period of you working there. Because you were still bringing something creative and they'll remember those shifts where you were playing New Order or Acid House or Brazilian music. So I think you've got to give yourself credit on two levels with that.
No, I mean, it was so funny, but it got to a point though where I remember, so the turning point to this strange period of my life was when, because I was still kind of gigging occasionally, doing live streams, but I really lost a lot of energy and drive for it when everything stopped. I really felt down about it. When everything ground to a halt, I really had no energy or drive to do anything. I was a bit down creatively. You know, yeah. I really wasn't motivated.
How have you picked yourself up from that?
Well, it was moving to Berlin. So what happened was I had a trial shift at Waterlane Boathouse, which is a bar. And it was honestly one of the worst shifts of my life. Someone laughed at me because of how bad I was pulling a pint. And basically, I got to a point where it's like, right, am I going to do something with my life? Or am I just going to apply for bar jobs for the next 6 months? You know, like, this isn't working anymore. Because I wasn't even making any money. And the game-changing thing was I had a very good friend of mine, and he came to visit me, and we went swimming in the Yorkshire Dales. And he told me his girlfriend decided to do a master's abroad. And she's saying how amazing this was. She's doing like an internship with the master's. It was in the creative industries. And that kind of planted the seed. And then I started looking at doing degrees abroad. And I found this one in Berlin. And there's an internship. There's loads of creative work within the degree. And I've always wanted to move abroad. My family are actually part German as well. And it kind of all fell into place. I had signed for a place in Leeds for 2021. But within a month, I got onto this course. And I don't know, as soon as that seed was planted, it was like, okay, here's a new direction for me to go in. Here's some new experiences. I think I just need to go for it. Because for my entire time at Leeds, I felt the city always had something to offer me. And I love Leeds to the bottom of my heart. And it was only at that point I was like, actually, there's nothing more to do here. And that was very weird. I was like Leeds' number one fan. And then after after 4 or 5 months working in the kitchen, washing pots, you're kind of like...
You know, it probably shifts your perspective of not just working life itself, but everything that's surrounded by that. And if you're doing something like that and then going back and still living in Leeds and being surrounded by this kind of shell/ghost land of what you used to know, I can imagine it really shifts your perspective, wherever you're living, I suppose.
Well, this is the thing, and I'm so glad I did it. And I'm really happy. And like, I don't look back at that time and think, God, you know, I actually loved doing that. But it's so funny. What happened was actually, I remember I found this course and I think I was going to apply for it in Berlin. And I told one or two people, I was like, do you know what? I'm considering moving to Berlin. And people were like, oh, that's really cool. That sounds great. And I was like, yeah, that does sound great, doesn't it? Henry moving to Berlin. Sounds good. I used to start telling some more people. And I think before I knew it, I told too many people not to do it, you know.
You taught yourself into it. So what are the restrictions like over there, and what have you been able to get up to since moving?
So it's worth saying that basically I moved in October. The first month of October, the restrictions were okay. Bars were open. They had to close at 11. But there were day parties still going on, which is kind of the crucial element, because I was still basically going clubbing for the first month, which for someone who hadn't been clubbing for 7 or 8 months is a bit of a revelation. So that was really amazing, because for like the first 4 weeks, it was just partying loads, meeting so many new people. And it was the most refreshing feeling I could have imagined, because I actually met someone from Hyde Park Book Club. We were put in touch. There's a big Leeds contingent in Berlin. And we met, and it's just so funny. On the first weekend, we went to a club called Elsa, and we going out, so we dressed up nice and flamboyantly. And I've not dressed up in a while, so I was really excited. I was wearing a red beret.
Wow.
And honestly, the first night dancing, I've not danced in 6 months by this point. We're going for it. I was like throwing my red beret around, and we were just going up to everyone. Everyone's doing this. And it was just like the most, sigh of relief ever. And so for the first month, it was amazing. Just met loads of people. I'm just having a good time. And then lockdown actually started, which was tough. Like, restrictions are still quite tight here. And it's much more clear than the UK. But what was my saving grace? There's two things which I did, which I'm really thankful for. One was like, I made my online presence a lot better, because I decided when I moved to Berlin, I was a saxophonist in Leeds, but I was too nervous or too self-conscious to call myself one or to go up to people and be like, this is what I do. Because people knew me from the start of uni. I wasn't that good at the start of uni. I mean, to be honest, I'm still not that great now, but I just don't tell anyone.
Fake it till you make it.
Literally. And like, I was thinking about this today, because I was thinking about this, what we were going to talk about. And fake it till you make it came up. But then I thought, I need to give myself credit, because I practice like a few hours a day. It's not like I can't play the saxophone. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really care about it.
It's quite clearly your passion. I remember bumping into you in your second year of your music degree and being like, Henry, how's things? And you just went, I just want to play my saxophone, man.
Literally. Literally.
I don't want to study.
I actually went busking yesterday on the canal in Berlin. And I just was there for hours. I was like, this is great. I mean, don't know if anyone else likes it, but I'm having a great time, you know. But this is what I did to Berlin. And this is the real crux of like why I feel what I've felt has benefited me from moving. It's that I've been able to reinvent. Well, not reinvent, but I've been able to take control of how I want to describe myself. So when I meet people now, they're like, oh, what do you do? I play the saxophone. There's no like, oh, I've just got to Leeds, you know.
You've not got that kind of somebody knows you and can say, oh, well, I remember when you used to do this or when you were doing that. I suppose it's almost a fresh start in that sense.
Exactly. And so I kind of paired that with making sure I had a good online presence. And I, there's a bit of, you know, my Instagram is Henry Weeks Music, which I just think is so lame. But also, you have to put yourself out there, because if you're not going to do that, who else is going to do that? You know,
someone's going to beat you to it. And that's, there's nothing worse than knowing that you didn't go through with something and then somebody else has done it and kind of being in an envious position of them. But you talked about identity, and obviously I know you from uni, which it's going to be quite clear from this conversation, but I still had a bit of a Google and a bit of a look on your website, which is brilliant. And the name, let me get it right, the name Bobby Hoffman came up. If we're talking about identity, is this your alter ego?
Yes. Well, this is quite funny, actually.
Tell me about that.
Bobby Hoffman, be the Bob Hoffman. Bobby Hoffman is someone who's very hard to get in contact with, it's worth saying. He's kind of peaked in the 80s, but has now just been pushed back to doing 1 p.m. DJ sets on a Sunday. I think he actually did a set at the Thursday Scholar recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you two have never been seen in the same place.
No, we've never been seen in the same place. I tell you what's funny, though. I love Bobby Hoffman, but I'm actually a bit out of touch with Bobby Hoffman.
Right.
Because what was quite funny about Bobby Hoffman, we love Bobby, but he wasn't necessarily the master of his craft.
Right, okay.
So in Berlin, and it's very different from the, or they're very different from the UK, you can literally walk down the street and no one will bat an eyelid at what you're wearing. You know, in Berlin at the moment, double denim's in.
Is it?
And so I'm wearing double denim all the time, you know. And I'm walking down the street and Bobby Hoffman is a big fan of double denim. But I don't have to pretend to be Bobby Hoffman anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, I completely get it now.
I think at uni, there's this kind of thing about, I don't know, I always felt like all the best DJs had like a different name. Or, you know, like they had like an alter ego. And part of me is just like, screw what people think, like, I need to just be who I want to be, you know. I think I'll tell you this is something very embarrassing, but my New Year's resolutions were to dance as much as possible and to look great all the time. And I think that what I mean by that is that, like, I'll kind of want to wear something to feel good about myself, to go out and dance to, or to play the saxophone with, to perform in. And like, I shouldn't be ashamed, or not ashamed, but I shouldn't be embarrassed of that being me, you know.
You shouldn't have to stand on a street corner and be worried that someone is going to see past your music and look straight at what you're wearing and potentially make a comment or act in a certain way. Do you know what I mean? That should, the two should really complement each other, because there's a creative element to both of them, isn't there? And if you can look and sound in quite a harmonious way, in a way that goes together, then you've kind of got the perfect cohesion. So what are you hoping to achieve long term in Berlin? Is there any events or anything, or even in the UK now that we've got our roadmap? This has been a good week for the music scene, I suppose.
For me, I'm recording a lot of music at the moment. I've got an album coming out with Tempo Fleece, which is exciting. I'm just playing as much as possible. And I think for me, like, I feel like in a really good place where, like, the franticness of uni, of trying to figure out who you are, it's kind of passed, and I feel like a much more settled person, which is really nice. So for me, like, the future is just actually like trying to have output, which I feel truly kind of represents who I am as like a person, as a performer, as a musician. I think, yeah, like, you know, there's projects lined up. I'll be coming back to the UK for a few gigs over summer, which I'm really excited about, a few festivals, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, that's kind of where it's going. Maybe Bobby Hoffman will return.
If I see anybody in double denim, I will ask them if they are Bobby Hoffman.
Bobby, is that you?
It's good to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel in terms of gigs and creativity. I mean, even some big festivals this week, I think, have announced that they're looking to go ahead in August, which is just such a relief for everyone. I want to talk about Brazilian music now because it's something that you mentioned, Brazilian Wax, which is kind of, if I get this right, it's a record label collective. How would you describe it?
We go for collective. There's two of us.
Right, okay, there's two of you.
I think we bigged up our description to it. it's me and my mate, Joe Osborne. He's just an amazing mind for music. And we present radio shows, we DJ, we produce nights, we book events. We met at uni, met at Leeds, and yeah, had this amazing 2 years of just the kind of craziest things. We just started on Leeds Student Radio and put on nights, and before I knew it, we were kind of, yeah, did UK tours, you know.
That's like such an amazing story of growth, because I think you're doing quite like a late night slot on the student radio, and then it just built and built and built to live performances and festivals. But why Brazilian music? Because it felt quite niche when I first heard about it.
I kind of love telling the story because it's like me and Joe are almost in a relationship and we've told it so many times.
You know? Do you end each other's sentences?
Yeah, like he's not here, but we'd literally just be, you know. So my mum's Brazilian. My mum's Brazilian. His family, his grandmother's Brazilian. And so he had a passion for Brazilian music. I didn't really know much about Brazilian music before going to uni. And then he was actually in my halls and we literally clicked straight away. And he kind of taught me a lot about Brazilian music. He is the man with the knowledge, you know. He kind of gave me the passion, and that's something I'm eternally grateful for. And it's kind of what our friendship's built on. I think also with Brazilian music, what we both love about it is the huge variation within it. So unlike certain other types of music, there's so much history, recent history in Brazil, so much variation in modern music, from electronic music to MPB to samba. You know, you have like an African-Brazilian diaspora within the culture. You have a big jazz element. And so when we did these nights and when we did the radio shows, we could literally play a dance tune followed by a samba tune and like all full high energy and keep people going. And yeah, I mean, it's just so funny now because looking at both of us, we're kind of heading in different directions, but we're very much within the music industry. And thinking about like the first two nights we did, they're just jokes. But that's kind of what Leeds and the DIY scene allowed you to do, which is great.
When you first went to do that radio show, which I'm assuming you probably had to pitch and think about, did you see the longevity in it? Or was it very much just a, let's give this a go and see what happens?
I mean, with a lot of things in my life, there has been no thought about what is going to happen next. And yeah, like we just kind of threw ourselves in it. And like, as you said, like I kind of threw myself into everything I did at Leeds Uni. I said yes to everything. And I actually said yes to too much in hindsight, but actually I'm really glad I did. I just went for it and I'd encourage anyone to do the same. And like even now in Berlin, I realize like if you just put yourself out there and just see what happens, the worst answer you can get is a no. No one's going to be annoyed at you for trying to take it to the next level.
No one can be angry at you for trying to reach out and make connections. That's my attitude.
Literally.
But one thing I do remember, one of my claims to fame, I've only been to one Brazilian Wax night and it was the first one.
Did you go to the very first one?
Yeah, it was at Wharf Chambers, wasn't it? And it was very tiny and I had some horrible Aztec shirt on. Again, probably my attempt at trying to find a cool identity. But yeah, it was such good fun. And like I remember dragging a few friends along that I was living with.
I think I made you drag a few friends.
But it was dead cheap as well, and it was just really good. And there was lots of big dogs in the kind of nightlife scene in Leeds, like your Flux and your Good Life, who you've actually gone on to work with, which is amazing. But it was just great to go to something which was at the start of its, you know, what ended up going on to have a really good life. So yeah, I just wanted to reminisce on that because I really enjoyed it.
There's few people who've been to the first one, so you were on the OGs. You've got a special place in my heart.
So we've had a really good natter so far, and I don't want to keep you for too much longer.
Oh yeah, I've talked a lot.
No, honestly, it's completely fine. So as we come to the end of our conversation, there's a few things that I want to mention. One of them is that we always share a piece of artist advice, and this week's artist advice comes from Marianne Hobbs, BBC Radio 6 DJ. She's a DJ in her own right. She's a broadcaster. She's kind of a legend of the music scene, really, especially the electronic music scene. And she just shared some really short and simple words with us, which was great. And she just said, charge at your dreams and never look back, which seems exactly what you're doing right now, Henry. I want to know, just in a few words, what is the overall dream for you and your music?
Oh, I think this answer would have changed so much within the last 3 years. But for me and for my music, I just really want to be truly happy with the output that I am producing. And actually, beyond that, as long as I know I'm putting my all into it, I'm working as hard as I can at it, and I feel like I'm putting my heart and soul into it, then I'm happy. And a few years ago, if you asked me that, I would have said, the dream is to turn Madison Square Gardens. Whereas now, honestly, if I can just play the music that I actually truly want to express, then I'll be very satisfied because I know that's all I need to do.
For anyone that knows you or for anyone that's listening, we just want you to keep being fun, fabulous, eclectic, eccentric, the lot. We've just talked about kind of what the future holds, but I always like to finish on kind of a retrospective note, because you've achieved lots, like you've grown some really cool things, and you've said that you've done too much at times, which might be the answer to my question really. But looking back on what you have achieved, if you could, what advice would you give to yourself when you first started to pursue a creative career?
I think I would tell myself to give myself more time and more space. And it's not necessarily about doing more or less. It's about giving yourself time and space. Especially when I started out, I was just like, you know, first and second year of university, I was just running around constantly. I never actually gave myself space to think about where I actually wanted to go. You know, what was the end goal for me doing all these things? And I don't regret doing any of them. But when I think about, you know, now I'm a bit older, I'm thinking about, what do I actually want to do? Why am I playing music a lot? You know, apart from myself, what's the, you know, in a year, 2-3 years, why am I meeting these people? You know, and it can just be for fun and there's no harm in that, but space and time. I've become a lot more reflective, which I used to think was just, you know, a waste of time, but actually
for old people.
Yeah, for old farts who'd lost it, when actually, you know, you can be the busiest person in the world and you can also give yourself space. But just giving yourself like half an hour a day just to be like, okay, I've got like 3 rehearsals today and I'm doing a DJ set. I should be freaking out, but actually I really want this and I love this music and they're great. Do you know what I mean? Like, that made sense. But then if you're really stressed and you're doing stuff you don't want to do, or you're not that passionate about it, then you need to think, are these the decisions? Or is this where you want to be putting all your energy into?
You summed that up really well. And I think it's about giving yourself space, acknowledging the bigger picture sometimes and why you're doing certain things and what that's leading to in a sense of achievement. And at times it's also okay to have a mixed feelings towards things, whether that's a feeling of nerves, a little bit of anxiety mixed in there sometimes, or just pure excitement. Like, all of that is okay. And that's probably the best, you know, if you just felt one certain thing towards something, there's probably a bit of an imbalance there, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, thank you. Honestly, thank you so much for coming out and taking your time out. Are you an hour ahead there?
I am indeed. So I've had a little bit of wine and I'm going to be heading to a birthday party soon.
I'm very, very jealous. But thank you so much, Henry. It's been great. I've absolutely loved it. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Great to catch up.
Huge thank you to Henry for joining me all the way from Berlin. Do check out his website and social media pages to keep up to date with his events and performances. We'll put a link up on our link tree for you. Please don't forget to follow us on social media at Starts and Grafts on Twitter and Instagram, and feel free to leave us a lovely review on Apple Podcasts. I've been your host, Connor. Ella's been your producer, and we'll be back again next week with another episode. But until then, take care.